Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm a little tired. How are you?
Well, I took a nap, so I shouldn't be tired, but I'm just a little groggy, even though I've been up a while.
Me too. I've done the same thing. We had a little birthday celebration for our oldest child, who will be 22 on Wednesday, and so I'm going to quit saying his age because it makes me feel really old.
Yeah, really.
But we
My
did
baby's
that today.
21.
And, yeah. Oh,
well.
Can you believe that? I know. They grow up, don't they?
They do grow up.
I know. But this weekend I've been filming my conference to put on DVD, which I'm so excited about. But, boy, it's funny when a one-day conference takes about 2 days to video. And that is just a really tiring process. And I know it will be in edits for months. And, boy, I don't even need to wear myself out talking about it now. But it's just been a little exhausting.
I'll bet it has. I would have gone the easy route and done the tape what you did, but I'm sure this will be a better product. So when it comes out, people will love it.
I hope that would be hard. Yeah, listening to yourself and watching yourself, and you know how you always tell me that I'm my worst critic? Well, let me tell you, that was in full-blown, I can't even think of a good word for that, but yeah, it was, that's been kind of a different couple of days for me, even though I've videoed myself a lot and watched lots and lots of videotape, but when it's just me, when there's not a kid there or a family there to kind of say, well, that wasn't so perfect because of blah, blah, when it's just yourself,
right?
It's a little hard to look beyond those things. So anyway, that's
fine.
Do
you think you got it done?
We did.
The
taping part. I'm hoping that's done. We'll see. Well,
good.
We'll see. All right, let's move on with announcements. This is show number 126. I've got to some way work that into the introduction. I need to figure out a new way to say it. And now I don't even think I can stop myself from saying, welcome to Teach Me to Talk. This is Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
Okay, from now on I'll say, this is Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. What show are we doing tonight, Laura?
That's perfect. That is perfect. Then I can give the number and the title, and then people will know if they've listened before. So it's show number 126. I think it's our final show in our series about stages of play, but I've said that now, for a couple weeks in a row.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on it.
Yeah, but we've gotten such good feedback from this series, and tonight we have another question from a mom who has asked about expanding play with some different ideas. She's getting a little bit stuck, it sounds like, when she's playing with some different kinds of toys. So we'll talk about those specific ideas. But before we move to that, let me make my announcements. Upcoming conference dates: Charleston, West Virginia, September 15th, Dallas, Texas on October 19th, and Shreveport, Louisiana on Friday, October 21st. You can find out all kinds of registration information at teachmetotalk.com and just check the category conferences. And then I wanted to mention what I put on teachmetotalk.com's Facebook page this week. There is a great video of a dad of a daughter with autism. Have you seen that, Kate?
I did watch it. Yeah, it was good.
It's good. It's so simple because he's holding up those index cards and he's not talking. And the music is in the background, which always makes me a little teary-eyed when I hear songs like that. And just good information about autism and then some personal information about his own struggle with his daughter. And it was just really, really great. So if you've not looked at that, please look at that and then pass it around so we can help increase awareness among our friends on Facebook who may not have all that information about autism. So I thought that was great. The next thing that I wanted to mention is a therapist who listens in her car as she drives from appointment to appointment asked a question that she a long time ago, she had heard us mention the Time to Sing CD, and she wondered about that. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's a DVD that a dad made for after realizing that his child with apraxia could not sing to regular, fast-paced children's songs. And we've talked about this a lot on the show. Sometimes toys that are musical, the pace is so fast, I can barely sing it. Don't you try to sing with some of your toys sometimes, Kate, and you're going like, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you. Happy
They're so fast. I don't know. I guess that's fast. You know, they think that kids like that, and maybe they do, but for apraxic kids, there is no way they can get a word in with the song at that pace. So that DVD is, as you said, I think the father, as I recall, we heard about that years ago at a training we attended together, and I think the father was some kind of musician or a conductor or something. So he was the perfect person to produce this DVD. And it's familiar kid songs that are sung slowly. It's kind of funny how slow it is because you're so used to the wheels on the bus go. And this is like the wheels on the bus. But those kids who can't chime in with a normal kid song because they're way too fast, can get, you know, begin to sing along with these songs. So it's a cool idea, and I've used it and had a lot of families do well with it.
Me too. And if you're really looking for a tool like that, especially to introduce that slower singing pace to parents, if you have a parent that hasn't really internalized how slowly they have to go, it's a good tool for that. I haven't used mine in a long, long time. And I remember that I think I lost mine, and then I got... You made me a copy or something. I probably shouldn't say that on podcast. But the link is there. If you've never purchased that CD or don't know about it, it's called Time to Sing, and the link for that information is on Facebook, on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page. There's also a link on there for the new Cookie Monster toy with the backpack. And remember, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. We didn't think that the new version of that Cookie Monster was similar to the old version that we're using because it's mechanical. But we didn't know that the new mechanical version actually does have the feature that you can feed Cookie Monster and it ends up in his backpack. And the mom who called... I know. The mom who called the show last week actually found that link and then sent it to me so that you can see it work.
Cool.
So that's on Facebook, too. My own, you know how we can just totally pick apart a toy, though, and say, I wish they would have done it this way. I think that the Cookie Monster might freak some kids out with his voice, how it sounds. And, you know, sometimes those mechanical-sounding toys, or when they put the voice with it, it does scare some kids. So I haven't seen this toy in person. That would be my only concern. Just listening to the video, I thought, ooh, that sounds a little creepy.
Well, and sometimes when I do my Cookie Monster, particularly when I'm making him eat, nom, 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 that scares kids. So I could see where the mechanical one could. But I guess if you just took out the batteries, then it would not talk, right?
I guess, but I wonder if it would still work.
Maybe because there's something mechanical about him eating it. It's not like ours where you just stick it in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check it out.
We'll have to check it out. The video's on there, but I want to see it in person. I'm going to go to Toys R Us or something and rip that package open and try that thing right there before
see
I
see if it's good, huh?
It.
Well, I hope it is good because I will say I have so many parents who show an interest in that toy.
Right.
And I'm always telling the same story. I got it 12 years ago, and, you know, there's really not. You might get it on eBay. Of course, I don't necessarily love it when my family's run out and buy my best toys because then a lot of times the child loses interest in mine. So
the
anyway.
Novelty is gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would, if it works and if it doesn't scare your particular child, I think it would be a winner. So I want to look at that one, too. Okay, so those were the things that were on Facebook this week. And I love it when listeners are leaving feedback there. So that's an easy way to pass along information or ask a question. It's a little bit easier than leaving it on the website. And I'll tell you, I've gotten really spoiled after doing the Facebook for Teach Me to Talk, but it's, again, how the uploading process, all of that is just so much easier there. So I've updated that a lot more often. I get to update the website. So there you go. You can get that information there. Okay, let's move right along into what we think might be talking about the last stages of play. And again, we're not talking about in older children. We're just confining this to the toddler developmental level. And so these would be things that children would do with play when they are developmentally between 2.5 and 3. And we left off last week, I think, with starting to talk about when children get to the point that they can use or they can start to play without necessarily having a prop there. And that's not going to happen with lots of children until, again, they are developmentally almost 3. And so our guys in early intervention, the kids that are on our caseload, we may never see that before their birthdays, because even though they're turning 3, they still developmentally may be 24 months, 28 months, 30 months, and you really don't see these things that we've been talking about until a kid matures cognitively and socially and language-wise. Until those things come together, you might not see these kinds of play. Although we will, like we were talking about last week, the exception to that would be our children that are apraxic that just only have that motor planning part. And if they were talking a little better, their language would have already been caught up because their cognition is already there. So you might see more advanced forms of play in those kinds of kids, even if their language skills aren't there. But when you're talking about kids that have had a global play, like the mom who's asked a question on Facebook about expanding play said she has a little boy with Down syndrome who's just turned 3, and she needs some new play ideas to help him move along. But even though he's chronologically 3, developmentally he's probably well behind that. And I don't know this little boy. Who knows what developmental level he's at? But my point is, you can't just go by age. You've got to look at where the kid is functioning developmentally and expect to see that play as cognition matures, not necessarily their chronological age or even where their language age is. Does that make sense?
Does to me.
I love that answer when you say that. Okay. So, those kinds of play that we would see as children are turning 3 would be that they start to make their toys try to talk, or their toys talk to each other. And I always think it's really cute when kids do this and they'll take the farm set and have one farmer talking to another farmer. And it's cute when they start to do the voices. And instinctively, you'll hear a kid, even if they're still struggling to talk, and they'll, you know, do the whole, "Hi, farmer. Hi, farmer," and even try to use little voices. And I just, it just melts my heart when I hear that, because I think, he really gets this whole pretend play thing. But again, these are things that we don't always see on our caseloads, do we?
I don't see it much, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not usually before, no, I really don't.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's, even if they had it cognitively, they still don't really have it language-wise. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
that's what I meant, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might even see a kid trying to do this or struggling to do it, but know that the cognition is there and you just got to support it with filling in the scripts that would go with that kind of play or the language level and help children scaffold their skills, as you would say, so that they're moving toward that higher developmental level. So making a character talk is one of the things that a child would do. The other thing that they do at this level is that they make their toys start to have adventures. And by this, they engage in several different actions in a row. So if a child were playing with a baby doll, she might have the baby wake up, brush the baby's hair, get the baby dressed, put her in a stroller, and then pretend that they're going to the store. And so as the kid is turning 3, you might start to see that where they sequence those 3 or 4 activities that previously had just been isolated events. She might have previously just gotten the baby ready or just given the baby a bath or just had the baby eat. But as they're turning 3 and get to this more advanced level of play, they sequence all that so that it's more realistic, and there's a whole little scheme there. Sometimes they do things that it doesn't even look to be related as you're just watching them play, and then all of a sudden you get it and think, oh my goodness, she's pretending that she's the mommy and there's the baby, and, you know, whatever idea that she's tried to do then. And so it's really interesting to watch that develop. And I remember watching that in my own children and thinking, oh my goodness, there's her imagination. Sometimes kids will do this kind of play without the language, but of course in therapy we're focused on it with the words, and we're helping them make those sequences, as, and sometimes we're the ones giving them the ideas, and we're not so much watching them play independently as this information really applies to looking at their independent play there. So I wanted to throw that in as well. You might not hear the language, but of course in therapy sessions you want to be sure that you are using language to accompany that kind of play. And then the last step in this advanced play is that the child starts to pretend himself and takes on those roles. And this is where you start to see lots of dress up. Were your girls into that, Kate?
Oh, yes.
When they were preschoolers, yeah.
Definitely. We had lots
Macy
of costumes.
Yeah, Macy, my boys loved it too. And they, of course, I used Halloween costumes. And I remember every year on November 1st, going and getting the clearance costumes so that they could have a couple more that fit in addition to what they had just been for Halloween. But that's a good time to pick that up, and you'll start to see children really taking on those kinds of roles themselves. And little boys typically do like the superhero stuff or the fireman or whatever character happens to be the end character at that point. Macy had every Disney princess looking dress.
That was Greta's
that we
thing.
Could find.
Ariel and all the, yep, she had all the princess things.
Yeah. And at I had a job early in my career where we wore lab coats. And I remember Jonathan really always pretended to be a doctor with my lab coat. I always thought it's pretty funny with, you know, Laura Mize right there, but he still, you know, he was doctor whoever on there. And so they might even take something that's more realistic to do dress up with too, or playing in mom or dad's clothes so that they're still doing that more advanced pretend kind of play when they're dressing up. And that's a fun thing too. And when I did play group in our group program, we just started to introduce that kind of play, but remember we only saw kids until they were 3-2. And so again, even then, most of the kids that we were seeing weren't quite there developmentally to really be able to enjoy that. But preschool settings very often have those dress-up centers where children can have the props to support that more advanced kind of play where they're really pretending to be another person. And it's really interesting to watch that kind of play develop. Do you have any comments about that, Miss Kate?
I guess my kids must have been a little older when they, well, maybe Greta was a little older, and she was calling the shots. I remember at the time we lived in a neighborhood with tons of little kids, and we had gotten our first video camera, and along with the costume stuff, they got into making little movies, and each one had a little role, and oh, it was big to do. Yeah, that was very big at my house. My basement was the
Our
studio.
Our kids like to do that, too, and they were older. My kids were older preschool or maybe even kindergarten when they were
right.
Starting to want to make movies of each other doing that, and that's really fun. You know, and as moms or even as therapists, you could introduce that kind of thing with kids and take some little videos of them doing that, pretending, and then watch that. And children love to watch themselves. At the stage of children that we typically work with, you know, babies and toddlers under 3 with developmental delays, they may not quite get that yet.
No.
But a little older, you know, and if someone's listening and you actually work with 3- and 4-year-olds or your own children of that age, that would be a fun little thing to introduce and do. And perhaps children would understand that and think that was cool to watch themselves dressed up like Cinderella, or again, I think Halloween costumes make that really easy to introduce that kind of play.
Right.
Okay, I'm glad we got through the official stages there. Let's back up a little bit, though, and talk about the question that we had related to expanding play with different ideas. And this was, like I said, on Facebook from a mom, and I'm pulling it up now so that I can read the whole thing. And she says, oh, my goodness, if I can find it. I'm a parent who's really enjoying your podcast on the stages of play. I know we need to help our 36-month-old with Down syndrome learn how to play. Can you provide more scenarios in your podcast, such as baby dolls, farms, house, and kitchen? I have trouble moving from basic play, such as feeding a doll, and then feeding the, she says feed the farmhouse, but I think she means feeding the animals in the farmhouse, to the multiple play and sequencing play that you discussed. He gets the basic play, but I need ideas to add and also toy ideas. Thanks. So let's take a stab at this. And again, let's not talk about it from that more advanced play that we just reviewed. Let's back it up to where he probably is, which was more like the stuff that we talked about last week. And she says that he's already mastered one-step play scenarios, such as giving the baby a bottle. So she wants ideas for that next little level of play. And we talked about last week lots of ideas that you could do with baby dolls. But remember, we talked about it with that mom who called in with the context, and we said, if he doesn't like dolls, do all of the same stuff with Thomas. And so I would suggest to that mom that she go back and listen to that show. And so the ideas that we gave her for all the one-step stuff, what were some of those, Kate? We said feeding. You said washing Thomas with a wipe. We said she had just talked about she had gotten that Fisher-Price playhouse, or Fisher-Price, I'm sorry, playground. We said that she could make Thomas slide, and we suggested that she could get a spoon and a cup. We've already said that feeding stuff. We suggested even a hairbrush or a little hat. So what I would suggest to this mom is that she take, have all those accessories available, and then help him do two or three of those things in a row with that. And isn't that how you see play start to emerge in these sequences with the kids on your caseload? You're just feeding the baby and then maybe washing the baby's face. Or you are brushing the baby's hair and then putting the hat on. Or you are changing the baby's diaper and then making the baby go to sleep. Isn't that how you do it in therapy? Because that's what I do.
That's what I do, yeah. And I find that kids do, this is a little less taxing cognitively because kids are so familiar with those daily activities because they do them and their baby sister or brother does them. And so this
right.
is very familiar territory for every child, really, and so I think their chances of being interested in understanding it are better than more creative, less
yeah.
common, you know, play schemes that we might introduce. So this generally is a pretty easy thing to get kids to do.
And it's where you start. You meet the
mm-hmm.
child where he is. And she said he can do the basic play. So what I would suggest is that she combine a couple of those ideas. And again, so that it's not so hard and not so new that he won't join in with that kind of play. I don't think we've talked about using a pretend bathtub in a long time. Have we talked about that in the last couple of shows when we've been talking about stages of play? That is a winner. And if you don't have a plastic pretend baby doll tub, anything will do. An empty white box can become a bathtub for a baby doll. And I like to use the baby dolls that are completely plastic. I don't like to use, for this, I don't like the ones that a kid decides that, you know, when I'm playing bathtub with a kid, you know, that'll put one of my babies has that kind of beanbag body. Get a little
uh-huh.
grumpy when the beanbag baby gets thrown in the even 1 inch of water. So use a completely plastic baby doll, and you can really add just an inch or so of water, and kids love that. Have you played a bathtub lately, Kate?
You know, I haven't used water lately, and I'll tell you why. I did it with a kid in a daycare once, and I swear to goodness, I couldn't get her to do anything else every time, water, water. Like, oh, no.
Because she loved it so much.
She
yeah.
loved it. So I used the bath, but frankly, I haven't put water in it lately because of that kid getting stuck, and I thought, why did I put that water in there?
what I do more than water? I squeeze the moisture from a wipe. You know, I'm
always
using.
That's better.
Yeah. Because it's just a little bit, and kids can't really make too big of a mess with it, other than they'll want to use, you know, 17 wipes in
right.
a row to squeeze as much. And that's even kind of a fun thing to do with, you know, you've got new vocabulary there that you're introducing with squeeze, which
and
again,
what kid
so
doesn't
many
like to squeeze wipes. That is a universally loved activity. Any child, doesn't matter where they are cognitively, if they've seen a wipe before, they know you can squeeze them.
And for kids who are really struggling to use different vowel sounds, I can get a long E from squeeze better than any other word. Even if they can't get that consonant sequence at the beginning, who cares? And nobody ever gets the Z at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you want to use that. And you can do early descriptives with wet and cold and dry. I like incorporating those kinds of words, too. So the baby bathtub is a fun thing to do. And think about how you're sequencing that. The baby has to be naked, so you're taking the clothes off. You're putting the baby in. You're getting the water there. You're talking about washing. You can also do body parts on the baby doll. And then, you know, if you're pointing to the baby doll's toes, then you can have the kid point to his toes, too. You can do a ton of different things with that. And then when you're finished, you're drying the baby off, and usually it takes, with the kids that I play with want to get the baby out and put him back in, 4 or 5 times before they're really tired of it. I mean, you could really use a bathtub with a baby doll for a whole darn session and it not get boring, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, with a lot of kids, maybe not every child, but with...
Not every kid.
But,
yeah but with a lot of kids,
it is a big winner. And I think a lot of times that... Sometimes I'm guilty of this, and I think sometimes parents might be. As you described, taking off the clothes, involve the child in each step of the process. Don't be so accommodating that you take off the clothes and you don't even make
right.
that part of the routine because you're thinking,
right.
oh, we're just giving the bath. But part of giving the bath is getting the clothes off, and the more engaged and involved the child is, the more beneficial it is to the child. So...
And think of all the language that you can do with that. Most of the time, the kids that we work with are not going to be able to get those darn pajamas off the baby. So they have
right.
to ask for help. And asking for assistance is a really important pragmatic or language use function. And if you've not introduced a word like help, that's the perfect time to do that. And then you can target all kinds of verbs with that. Pull, open... I like to say stretch. Kids think that word's pretty funny, too. Anything like that when you're taking the clothes off. And that's a really good point to make about that, with having them really participate with that. And don't rush in to solve the problem. Sit there a little while. If they're having difficulty getting the clothes off, you don't want to let them get so upset that they leave or just want to move on to something else, but let them try to figure it out a little while and then initiate asking you for help. And you can cue them. You can say, is it stuck? What should we do? Do you need help? You can cue like that, but you want to make sure that you've given them time to figure it out. And if they happen to try to put the baby in the bathtub with even the, you know, quarter of an inch of liquid, don't you make a big deal about it and say, oh, she's wet, her clothes, oh, no, oh, no. And isn't that funny? And that kind
uh-huh.
of protest there, kids will think that's hysterical. So that's a fun thing to do with that as well. What else could we do with that doll in the bathtub?
Oh, I've done kicking in there. I've done swimming
yeah.
in there. I've done splashing
mm-hmm.
in there.
Yeah, verbs are great. And I'll say, tell the baby, sit down, because what toddler has not been told, sit down by his or her mom in the bathtub. And toddlers, especially our little guys, like those bossy power words. And we've usually practiced down, or a lot of times sit might be kind of a new word when we're working on it in this context, especially if I've used it with another toy. If we've had kids if I've used that little school bus where we're putting, or that little pull car that we've talked about sometimes with the string, where we're making the animals or the characters or people or whatever sit down, and I'm thinking, I want to generalize that word. I want to use that word in a new way. Making the baby sit down in the bathtub is funny. And you can do all kinds of verbs with the baby doll here. And so, again, if you think about, excuse me, what new language parts of speech or new language forms you're working on, you can incorporate that just into nearly any kind of play. And that'll give you your new ideas. So even though with the baby doll in the tub, if you're making the baby swim and kick and splash and jump and sit, you can use those same kinds of words the next time you play farm with your farm animals, and you use those same words that you targeted with the baby. And so many times I think therapists or moms think, I've got to come up with a whole new set in a whole new play scheme, but really it's taking that basic vocabulary and helping kids generalize and use it with lots of different kinds of play. Don't you think so?
Absolutely, and it's really much more beneficial if you are carrying it over a big cross-section of different activities, because then it gives them much more exposure to the words, the likelihood that they're going to understand and hopefully, knock on wood, use those words is much greater. If they see it in this context, in this context, in this context, and it doesn't have to be a totally separate thing. And I do weird, you know, don't you find, Laura, that the kids love the weirdest stuff you do the most? Like, what might I do in the bathtub? Have them drink the water. Ew! And then I'm going to be corny about how gross that is, and they're going to spit it out. And that's the kind of stuff, particularly little boys seem to like that goofy stuff.
Right.
But girls like it, too. You know, just whatever goofy thing you can think to do. Just like splashing. Well, what child hasn't been fussed at for splashing in the bathtub? But you can make the baby splash, and it's the most hilarious thing in the world. Even if it's really not splashing out of the little plastic tub. They get it. They know, ooh, splashing is bad. I want to try that.
Right.
So.
And they love telling the baby, no, no.
Yeah.
And if you're working on two-word phrases, no, baby, or stop, baby. That's a fun, fun way to target that. And that whole piece with heightened affect, where you get so worked up and excited about it, makes it much more likely that the child will imitate your silly vocalizations or your bossy vocalizations with that. You know, and we were talking about using different parts of speech there. So if you do some verbs with that, with the baby in the bathtub, that would be fun. You do prepositions, you know, the baby's in the bathtub, and then you make that bad baby jump out of the bathtub, and then you're telling baby, no, back in, get in, more bath, more bath. That's a ton of fun. You could turn the bathtub over and make the baby sit on the bathtub and then jump off the bathtub. And again, what more fun way to target that when you're using the baby doll as your prop. And then once you've done that and you're ready to move on to the farm, do the same thing, like Kate was saying, with helping them generalize that word to a new set of toys. So what I would recommend for this mom is that she think about what action words or what verbs she wants to target, and then she think about what prepositions she wants to target. And again, if you need a list of those, you can find those in an article on the website. It's the vocabulary section is actually in the sign language category, and it's called First 100 Signs or Words or something like that. But it's pulled from Dr. Rossetti's infant-toddler language scale, and it's based on the first 100 words that typically occur in a toddler's vocabulary. So pull that out if you've not, if you don't have some little list to go by. If you've come to any of my conferences, that's one of the handouts that you've received. So take that out and look at that and think, how many of these different words can I carry over from one theme to another? And again, we're really talking about your verbs, your prepositions, your adjectives or adverbs, and those would be those early descriptive words. And we already talked about a couple of those: wet versus dry, hot versus cold, big versus little. Don't get overly stuck on color words or being too fancy with your descriptives. at this point. You just want those really, really early basic descriptive words that could carry over again from setting to setting to setting when you're playing with new toys or that you would the child would use in his or her own daily routines.
I think that's a great list, by the way. I've used that a number of times when parents start to say to me, I don't really know what words, you know, are appropriate. I give them a copy of that list because it's dead on, I think.
I think it's dead on, too. And if you want to, if you're a therapist and you want to do your own little mini research project here, look back. If you're a therapist that keeps data and you keep word lists from session to session, you'll hardly find, I mean, from kid to kid, there may be one or two words that they use that aren't on the list. But if you start looking at your kids as a whole, most of their vocabularies are on that list. And what better reason should we use a list like that than it's pulled from typical development? Because really everything that we do should be based in research or using all that stinking theory that we learned in school. And so we take what words we know toddlers use and then introduce those into our therapy sessions. And again, to a mom, that might be something she's never thought about before. And you don't want to make this overly academic when you are playing speech therapist at home with your own child. But at the same time, it does help to have a little bit of structure and something to go by so that you're not constantly having to think about it or reinvent the wheel here. You know, use a list so that you can move forward with that. We talked about prepositions or location words, and let me just run through the ones that are most commonly used for children or the earlier ones for children under three, and that would be up, down, in, out, off, on, and then here and there. And I think kids use those pretty frequently. The verb list is pretty long. I'm going to read through it here. Eat, drink, go, stop, run, jump, walk, sleep, and I say sleep, but mostly I say night-night. What about you?
I say both, but certainly more night-night than sleep because I think it's a lot easier to actually say.
Yeah, and it's got that early reduplicative pattern that we're always trying to get kids and think about that, well, we should, as therapists, be thinking about how can I work on several different goals here, and if we have children who can't sequence very well, we're thinking of what vocabulary can we give them opportunities to get that second syllable in there, and night-night is a great one to do that. Wash, let's keep going with this verb list. Wash, okay. Kiss, open, close, push, pull, fix, broke or broken, whatever grammatically would apply there. I guess broken would be the descriptive word for that. Play, hug, love, hurt, tickle, gimme. I don't really say gimme, do you? I don't do give me until we're working on carrier phrases. What about you?
The only time I do it is when a kid uses what I call me the gimme fingers.
You're right, that's when I do it too.
They're reaching out and doing both hands, like gimme, gimme, gimme. Then I'll say, oh, I see that. Gimme, 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 gimme. So I do it then. I don't usually introduce it on my own unless I have a kid who just uses that, which I do have on a fairly regular basis. So,
yeah, that's when I do it, too. And when I think about my own children, Macy was the only one of our three who really mastered the gimme fingers. And she said that pretty early. But, again, I think it was because she was already doing that gesture, and then we introduced that word.
Mm-hmm.
All done and all gone. Dance, help, fall, shake, see, watch, look, sit, and stand, and usually I'm doing that as sit down and stand up rather than just the verb alone. Throw, catch, blow, cry. Boy, how many times a day do you pretend to cry? I do that all the time. Throw, swing, slide, climb, rock, ride. Come on, which is the version of, you know, Kentuckians say that as one word. Come on, come on, come on. And then some verb for draw or color. So those were the most common verbs. That's, you can work for months on that word list right there, don't you think?
Absolutely. And so many of the kids we see, Laura, they once they're starting to talk and they're building a little vocabulary, so often I think their natural thing, if you can call it natural, that we're helping them acquire, it seems like they get stuck or they get proficient with a nice little core vocabulary of nouns.
Right.
And then it's kind of like, it's hard to form a phrase with nothing but nouns.
Right.
And so these kinds of words seem to be a little bit, to require a little bit more like concerted focus on them.
Teaching.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
of actually
yeah.
teaching them. Even if they understand them, they don't necessarily use them as readily. You know, they're saying baby, they're saying
right.
shoe, they're saying bath or bathtub,
right.
but they're
right.
not saying washed baby or, you know, whatever.
Baby sit, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of times when parents first start working on verbs, they do get stuck beyond eat and go and drink, and they think, what's next? What do I work on next? So if you just think about with your baby dolls or with your farm set or whatever you're playing, what verbs, how can I introduce these actions with a child? And even if you're just taking, you know, rewinding the podcast right now and jotting down several of those new words to work on, that gives you your play theme with your farm animals or your baby or whatever object, your Thomas, whatever you're using. You can make any little object do all of those things. And like you said before, Kate, it doesn't really have to make a lot of sense. You can be really pretty silly and goofy with that. And it's okay to make Thomas the Train dance. It's okay to make Thomas even climb, or it's okay to make Thomas ride another train. If you're trying to teach that new vocabulary and if you feel stuck in your basic little play routine, start looking at a word list to give you some new ideas. And again, what better way to do that than to take words that would naturally occur in language development and then purposefully teach those new words in the context of a new play routine. And I think you can get weeks and weeks and weeks of new ideas for play just using that verb list there and using the prepositions or the location words that we talked about, because you can make the cow go in and out and up and down and put the cow here and the cow there and make him jump off and all those things, and you can blend those concepts together, and you've got a whole, again, weeks and weeks or months of months of new things to do with your toys in play.
I would go a step further, Laura, you can say it's not okay, it's almost desirable. The goofier, the less familiar, I mean, at a certain point, maybe in the very beginning when it's really novel to a child and, you know, they've never engaged in play with a baby, but once they've kind of got the concept, when you introduce something kind of goofy, kind of unexpected, kids tend to really like that, and that's, you know, oftentimes what they're going to try and imitate. I had a funny situation a couple months ago. This little guy saw, we'd played babies, and he was kind of into it, but not too into it, so I had to do things to encourage him to like it a little more and stay with it a little longer. And, some number of weeks after that, I had done it, and then a few weeks later we had the baby doll back out, and the baby was brushing her teeth, and she took a drink of water, and we had her spit, and the mom started laughing, and I said, "What's so funny?" And she said, "The speech therapist was recently showing him pictures and asking what you do with the picture, you know, the object that's pictured,
uh-huh.
and there was some water, and she said, what do you do with this?" And his answer was spit.
Adorable.
I know. I was like, and you know, it was the kind of thing where you knew when I could tell when I did it that he loved that.
He loved it.
You get to spit that water out. And I was just pretending, but I was taking the baby and saying, spit, you know, And so he liked that and he remembered. And when he said spit, when the speech therapist was there, they thought it was funny, but they didn't really realize, you know, why would you say you spit the water? And then I did it.
Oh, the mom didn't put it together.
Yeah.
Oh, mom didn't put it together right from the beginning.
No, I don't think she did. she just thought it was kind of a weird answer he gave. And then when I did it and he was into it the second time, she remembered, oh, yeah, that's where he got that spit the water concept.
Oh, that's hysterical. And I hope the speech pathologist thought that was cute. The mom said that she did. She thought it was funny.
Yeah, they thought it was, okay, you know, a cute answer. I don't think anybody was upset by it, but, yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah.
But it stuck. He learned that. He liked that idea.
Well, and again, that's how you got him to stay with that baby when he might have wanted to move on, is introducing that thing that might be a little silly. Tickle is a fun one to do with, you know, and even, again, you're going to play that with baby dolls, but you can do that with your farm set and try to think about things, again, that are a little bit unexpected and a little more of a surprise. And I really, don't you save those, Kate, for when you're about to lose a kid, for when you see he's just about
he's
to start
bored.
To look around. Yeah. So that's when you introduce that silly little action. And, again, you're pairing the word with it, so it makes it a little more fun and a little more interesting. Okay, we gave her some new ideas to do with babies and with the farm.
Wait, I want to say one more that I know you do all the time and I do all the time, sneezing. My babies sneeze a lot.
They sneeze and they cough. They just hack up the worst stuff. But when you're doing that, what are kids trying to do? They're imitating you vocally. And if you have a kid who's not really talking yet, but who's a pretty good player, those kids will much more often try to imitate a sound like that weeks before you might hear a real word imitated, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. Achoo!
Yeah.
Achoo! They'll do that. Woo! With the sneeze very early.
Very early, and, you know, to make it even more silly, put the baby's hat on and have her sneeze the hat off, or have her put glasses from your Mr. Potato headset on the baby, or I think you have sunglasses, don't you, that you use with your baby
dolls?
I have
both. I have sunglasses and Mr. Potato Head glasses. Glasses are very big, too, yes.
Very big. And the kids will try to put that on themselves. And again, we were talking about turn taking and how you have them put it on them and put it on you and put the glasses on their mommies. But sneezing those glasses off are a funny, funny thing to do with kids too, especially when you feel like that you're about to lose them. And especially if kids want to keep just taking off and putting on and taking off and putting on, and you're thinking, gosh, we've done this for 10 minutes. Aren't you over this yet? Introducing that fake sneeze to get them to move on and do something different with those glasses, that's kind of a fun thing to do. And that's what I try to think of to do, too. Anytime they're really into something and they keep it going, I think, how can I expand that a little bit? And so that's where sometimes our goofiness comes in, where you're thinking, he really likes these glasses, but I can only let him poke me in the eye so many times as he's trying to put those on my face. What's the next thing we can do to help move this along a little bit? And voila, you've expanded play there, and you've got a whole new little activity that hopefully he's going to remember the next time you play that game, too, and do that routine, too.
Usually those are the things they want to go to right away. They do remember those goofy, funny. I've also taken Kleenex and put it on the baby's face, and then she sneezes and the Kleenex goes flying. That's a big one for those really visual kids. They like that. Any
they
goofy,
like that
animated,
a lot.
Over-the-top, silly thing you can do is normally a hit.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll you know, or a lot of times play peekaboo with that kind of thing, or even with the baby's wipe. And then if a kid, I'll move to make the baby doll, try to get the baby doll's little plastic hands to do things like cover up her eyes for peekaboo or wipe her nose if she sneezed. And kids will really try to make the baby doll's hands move and do that too, and they'll stay with that a long time. Have you done that before?
Not really.
Your more advanced kids will really, really like that. They'll darn near break the baby's arm trying to make it.
I was going to say, I don't think my baby could get her hands to her face. I have to try that.
Find a baby that can do it, and it's funny.
More flexible.
It's funny. Yeah, and you can do wipe, and you can do wash, and you can make the baby's hands go up there to cry. And again, that's a more advanced pretending kind of thing as children are, again, moving through these cognitive stages of play. That would be a more advanced thing to do, too. Okay, we talked about using baths with the baby doll, but you can give those darn animals a bath, too, or let those darn animals from the farm set swim or do some of those same funny things that you've done with the babies. I think we talked about that already. But again, you want to take that concept and move it along. Other, she asked for other ideas for a playhouse and playing with the kitchen set. And so let's give her some ideas for that too. With the playhouse, to me, that is that using a house is so dependent on a kid's initial what they like to do, because a house isn't always as enticing and fun as maybe a farm or some of these other toys that we've talked about. Do you have great luck with a house with lots of kids, Kate, or is it really specific for you too?
You know what? To be honest, I haven't even I have a couple of different houses, and it's been a really long time since I even bothered to drag them in. And as much as I love my loving family people with some kids, and I do certainly still use all those things that go with the house, you know, the furniture, all the little food things, all the characters. I don't know. It just seems like I had a lot of kids get kind of stuck on somewhat repetitive things with the house.
And
I'd kind of lose them on that. And I just decided a long time ago, you know what, they do better if I don't use the house. And so the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't use the house
not a
very
big house
much.
Person.
Yeah, I really don't. Mm-hmm. It depends on if they already like that and if they already have kind of a little house that they use. Now, I did buy a Melissa and Doug house this summer that I remember talking about, or maybe in the spring, several months ago on the show, and it has the different doorbells and it has keys with it. But that's usually what we're doing with that house is opening the doors and doing the doorbells. And, again, that's for a kid who might be a little bit more advanced with play and can actually get that little metal key in the door, but they're not doing very much verbally. So it might be our motor planning kids that were really still working on that vocal imitation piece before we get to real words. And so we're using things like knock, 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 and then pull and stuck. And again, words that aren't really words yet, those exclamatory play words. But when I think it's been quite a while since I've used a house for the purpose, real purpose of that pretend play. And so, again, I think I do what you do is I just have my people and my accessories, and, you know, I'm still using a lot of those little accessories that you gave me several years ago when I wasn't using those teeny tiny little things, and you said, why aren't you doing that? That's a lot of fun, and gave me your extras.
Did I say it like that? Now, come on.
I'm just being silly.
I'm just being sensitive. I'm kidding. Yeah,
you're not sensitive.
Huh? No, not particularly.
You're not sensitive. Yeah, but using those with it, and again, we're talking about their little loving family people. Sometimes you can do it with those things that look almost like Barbie dolls, like little Kellys or Barbies or any kind of little people-looking dolls. And then you might have the accessories that look like they go in the house, like the kitchen and the bedroom furniture. And then lots of the little teeny tiny things, like little bowls and little food. And like the food that you gave me, there's a little apple and a banana. And then the sets that we've purchased have a little pizza and the cupcakes, which are a huge hit. How many kids have you gotten to say cupcake? And that might be the first real multisyllabic word they use when they change the vowel from syllable to syllable. You know, they're not doing cuh-cuh, they're doing cupcake. And I think, oh, boy, there it is. There's a great target word right there. But those fun little things make playing with people or pretend characters much, much, much more fun. And these are for your more advanced kids who cognitively get those more advanced play themes. But Love and Family makes a great set like that. And if you don't have it, you can go look at those sets and maybe assemble some of that on your own, too. You know, just pull it from different toys or different pretend things that you have. As far as playing kitchen, I play that when children have the pretend stove and sink and kitchen, and lots of kids already have those pretend things there in their homes. But we say this all the time, if it's there and readily available, they don't seem to want to play that when I come versus something that I might bring in. Do you have find that same thing?
Yes, it's old hat. It's not fun if they have it, so I just usually don't try. Even if, I mean, usually for kitchen stuff, I take my microwave, I take my Velcro food, and that's novel, and they love that Velcro food anyway.
Yeah, the Velcro food is a big, big, big hit, and we've talked about that before, and you can find that sometimes at Toys R Us, sometimes it's in toy magazines, but I would never pay, you know, $30 or $40 a set for that plastic food that you can cut apart, but that's really, really fun for kids. It comes with a little plastic knife and a little cutting board, and you cut that apart and do that. And then you can add to that food. I have added, don't you use little plates and bowls and forks and spoons? And you can pretend with this. You can bring in your baby dolls or bring in whatever character you're using, and that's where you get the sequencing piece. And so you might cut that pretend food and then pretend that you're cooking it. If you have a little kitchen set there, a little Kate and I have an electronic little microwave that that has a light. You put the food in, you push the button, the little plate turns like a real microwave. The light comes on, and it has a sound, and then it does the beep, beep, beep at the end, which a lot of kids get a little bit fixated on the microwave and only want to do that. But that's how you introduce the sequencing with that kind of play, is you have them fix the food, then pretend to cook it, and then pretend to feed it to mommy or whatever object or character that you're playing with there, and that's how you build sequencing in there. Some kids like to pretend to wash the dishes afterwards, and I'll either use the plastic wipe box and then squeeze the water again and pretend to wash those dishes with the wet wipes, and that's fun. Or you can use their own little sinks there in their pretend kitchens. Moms do get mad at me when I introduce real water with that, though, because then their kids want to do that all the time.
They want to do it.
But a water fixation is pretty darn fun.
I remember when my oldest was young, the Fisher-Price stove set, you know, the big things that they sell, it actually, you put water in it and you could pump it out of the faucet. Oh, it was the coolest thing in the world. But they don't make those anymore. I think mothers must have protested against the use of the real water. But boy, she loved it, I'll say that.
But it's a lot of fun, and if you have a mom that's game for that, and if, as a mom, you know, of course you can decide during very special play times that you'll introduce that water, but kids really, really, really like that. And pretending to wash the dishes is really fun for a lot of kids, and I'll do it again like we just talked about for the baby dolls. I'm still squeezing that same wet wipe and then pretending we're going to wash all those kitchen utensils that we've used. And again, that's a winner. Kids think that's a lot of fun. You're transitioning and expanding the same vocabulary that you used during the baby's bath to now with a kitchen set and doing it with dishes and things. And that's, again, I think a lot of fun. And you can encourage moms to do that kind of play. And that's how you help moms when you're assigning homework, is you give them ideas to take that you've done that day and play with your same vocabulary and look around their homes for toys that they have or opportunities that they have to introduce that kind of play. Even just a kid playing in the kitchen like he's pretending with his own food and cooking and cutting and that sort of thing while mom prepares dinner, sometimes that's a real lifesaver. And I do remember all three of my kids pretending they were cooking and doing that kind of play while I was fixing dinner. And that was a lifesaver because they weren't constantly under my feet. Now, I still had to narrate from across the room, but that's just part of being a mom. You know, that's how you raise a kid. You take them with you from room to room to room and include that language stuff all day. And you do that, you know, again, you're using the same vocabulary that you did when you were playing one-on-one and helping them really even play a little more independently, even as you are over cutting or cooking or whatever you're doing, and you're still kind of helping them continue to play by talking about it with them as you do your thing. I'm always surprised when moms don't naturally do that, aren't you?
I am, and Laura, we've talked, we always date ourselves, I think, when we get to this topic, but it does seem like there are fewer moms who are are as open to having their kids. They say things like, well, I'm cooking. He can't be in there while I'm cooking. And I think, well, my kids were always in there when I was cooking. I don't know what that is exactly, but there does seem to be kind of a trend away from having your kids be with you throughout the day, regardless of where you are and what you're doing. And I do think there's, huge benefits to be gained, you know, letting them play in the sink while you're, letting them play in the cabinet with the plastic bowls and spoons and all those things. And I just did that and didn't know that it was good or bad. It just seemed to be a natural thing to do, and my kids always did well with it. And I see more and more moms kind of balking at that and saying, well, he could get burned, he could get hurt, he could get... And I always think, well, you do have to watch them a little bit, but it's, you know, it's not that hard to keep them from being injured. But parents seem to be a little more inclined, and certainly there are plenty of exceptions. But I see, seems like there is kind of a trend towards, no, he needs to be in there in the family room with the gate up so that he's safe and I don't have to watch him while I'm doing these things. And I think, but then what about that time you could, and it's not that you're going to interact with them the whole time, but there really is a lot to be said for that kind of shared experience of everyday life that kids think are so interesting and fascinating. And it seems like more and more kids are kind of sheltered from that now. And it's like they're kept in their own little spot alone.
I know, and I ask moms all the time, so how old does she have to be before she gets to go in the kitchen with you?
Yeah.
And sometimes they haven't really thought about that. When is that baby gate ever going to disappear? And so it is something to think about, and it's something as therapists, you know, we're not going to go in and tell somebody how to completely rearrange their whole home. But on the other hand, mom may never have really thought about it before. Sometimes kids are climbing over the baby gate, and it's still up, and I think he's more likely to get hurt from trying to hurl himself over the top than if you just let him in the darn kitchen.
Yeah,
so you can
I don't
set
know.
Up a little...
It's interesting. Have you come across any research that validates our theory? But it does seem like that's, and I don't know if that's just a general trend of today's society to be more cautious
the
and
safety.
More safety.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, I didn't stand my daughters at the stove when I was cooking, but they were always right there,
in the
sometimes
kitchen,
underfoot. And with girls, they were in, they were with me in the bathroom. They were with me when I was doing laundry. They were with me.
Oh, well,
I
let me tell
down.
You, the boys were with me in the bathroom, too. That didn't really matter.
Okay,
you know?
Well, I didn't know. I have two girls, so it was like no problem. I didn't worry about it. But I don't know if moms would feel comfortable with their sons in there. Anyway,
with a 2-year-old?
I would. I mean, if it were me.
We didn't know any differently, but well. Yeah, but I do think that you can, again, expand your play routines, and we certainly want you playing with your babies. And as therapists, you're talking to moms about playing with their toddlers one-on-one, but you want to be sure that they are expanding and using those ideas throughout the day, and we are really big about talking about using language in their daily routines. And this is one instance when mom is cooking where, and you might even help a mom say, you know, well, let's just put some things in there, some safe things that you know, in one little cabinet or over here, you know, in her play kitchen set, you can pull that into the kitchen or beside the kitchen and have her area over here where she could still be with you and still be out of the way, but playing in there when you're in there together. So those are some problem-solving things that you can help moms think about and help them move toward as well. So just a little thought there. Okay, I think we finished up our series on play today, unless we get any more super questions. And I want to thank the mom that her name is Kim, who left that on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page, and that was great. And keep those questions coming. We absolutely love that. If we don't get any more questions about play to tackle next week, I want to talk about the ways to separate willful noncompliance, is what this psychologist called it, from a skill deficit. And again, I think that I call that can't versus won't. And so we'll talk about those steps next week, because I think it's important information to share with therapists and families both.
I think, was that the link that you sent me, but I couldn't get on to it?
No, it was a different one. That was about separating autism from language delay. And we need to do that, too. Thank you for reminding me. I need to write this stuff down. We'll actually have a plan. How novel is that?
That'll be good. Of course, it could change, so that's okay.
That's okay. All right.
Okay,
join us next week.
Thanks
so
much.
Bye.
Bye.